You're listening to A Novel Podcast, in-depth discussions of literature from all genres and generations. I'm your host, Russell, and I'm joined by my wife, Sarah, and our good friends, Lauren and Julie. Today we're discussing One for the Money, a novel by Janet Ivanovich. Released August 26, 1994, it's the first in a series chronicling the escapades of protagonist Stephanie Plum. This novel was named a New York Times Notable Book, a Publisher's Weekly Best Book of 1994, and a USA Today's Best Bet, and won Ivanovich the 1995 Dilly Award. So I'd like to go ahead and ask Lauren to give us a synopsis of the book and your general impressions.
All right. So the book opens up with protagonist Stephanie Plum, who is early 30s, and she's a Jersey girl, and she was recently laid off from her job as a lingerie buyer. So she is financially kind of in a hard place right now. All of her stuff is getting repossessed. Her car is getting repossessed. She needs money fast. And her father suggests that her cousin, Vinny, needs someone to do filing at his bail bonds business. When she goes to apply for this position, it's already been filled, and she finds out that she could make some big money by becoming a bounty hunter. And her first assignment is the man that she lost her virginity to and hit with a car subsequently, who is a former cop, Joe Morelli, and he was accused of murder.
Now, did we find that there was a kind of a hit-and-run theme throughout the entire book?
There's a big car theme, definitely. My copy in particular, like, there are synopsises of the first couple books.
Yes.
And it actually lists all the cars that Stephanie drives within the book.
That's amazing.
Yes. I had that, well, a similar copy, anyway. That had, like, the first 8 or 12 books listed.
Yeah, I think it was 8. And then, like I said, it chronicles every car that she drives within the books because she's such bad luck with cars.
And the cars are really funny, I think.
Yes, the Buick.
Now, I had the abridged version, so, which I know is terrible, but the Buick didn't show up, did it?
Second book, I believe the Buick shows up.
Yeah, I think the Buick is in the second book, but I wouldn't have remembered that if I hadn't had that little synopsis in the end. So we should also add that this is, of course, the first in a series of 25 books.
I believe it's 22 at this point.
No, it is more than 18.
Yeah.
It's at least 22. If not, yes. I want to say I saw 26 at the library.
I want to say 20 because I read 21 and it had a green cover, and I've been looking for 22 and the library has not had it in, so I actually have to put it on reserve if I want to read it.
Okay.
Well, clearly the series itself must be overwhelmingly popular. What about it is it that makes it such a success?
I personally think that Stephanie is very relatable. She's a literal hot mess, and I very much relate to the fact that she's a hot mess, and I like that, and I like to see all little situations she gets herself into. While some of the situations I can't relate to because I'm not a bounty hunter, it's just kind of funny because I could see, like, the klutzy stuff I could see myself doing. Like, I could see myself saying, oh, hey, yeah, I could see that happening to me. Like, she's just very... And I hate to describe it this way because I feel like it's cliched, but she's essentially like every woman.
She definitely has a bit of every girl going on. I even wrote down that Stephanie Plum is who I would be if I had no impulse control and better metabolism. and came from New Jersey.
I like that. I feel that.
Yeah, there's just no impulse control. She just doesn't really, like, okay, I'll just sell the couch so I can go buy a handgun. This isn't a big deal.
And I have 50 extra dollars, and I'm craving a margarita or a daiquiri, so...
So, right.
I'm going to go
I could pay the phone bill, but instead, I'm going to go buy a blender. Right.
Yes.
Because of the free mix, which totally makes sense. That's a great description, Sarah. So here's what I have to add to that. What I love about, I think that why I also love her is because, like you ladies said, she's very relatable, but she's also as impulsive as she is and you know, a little kooky, she's also pretty smart. She's got really good instincts, because if you notice, and especially throughout the series, she does have a good instincts, which is kind of what leads her to solve all these crimes or catch all these criminals or whatever. It's because as hapless as she is, and as also lucky as she is, she is a pretty smart cookie. Like, she's got pretty decent ideas and instincts to be like, that doesn't feel right. Maybe I'll go check that guy out, or,
yeah,
you know? So I kind of appreciate that about her. They don't, you know, Janet Ivanovich didn't make her a complete dingbat.
Right.
Hot mess, yes, but at least hot mess. With some marbles.
Right. Maybe not super brains, but definitely some marbles.
Right. Right.
She knows
the
what's
marbles
going
roll
on.
Around up there a lot, but they are there.
They're there.
Yeah.
And I mean, she works like logically and methodically.
Right.
Okay, if I was Morelli, what would I do right now?
Right.
So I think that's sort of relatable too. Like,
yeah.
Okay. So often I'll read a book and be like, this is ridiculous. I would never behave that way. And I feel with Stephanie Plum, I'm like, oh, yeah, that seems plausible. Okay.
I would totally go to the gym where a psychopathic killer was and wear a tight skirt and a low-cut blouse.
Right.
I would totally hang out with the hookers on the side of the road. And
I probably would.
Lula.
That would be
and
fun.
I would
and bring them some beer.
Bring them a pizza and a beer, too, because, you know, I'm hungry, too.
I have to say, I got so excited when, obviously, like you ladies, I've read the series, so remembering how Lula was introduced.
Yes!
Like, I couldn't remember that. And
I forgot about her entirely.
I got so excited, fell in love with her all over again. Now I want to read the second one because I want to remember how their friendship initially developed, because I just remember I loved it.
I wanted to roll right into the second one. Yes.
I need to remember when Lula and Grandma Mazur form their connection because that was almost better
freaking
than
awesome
and Stephanie, because it was kind of like, you know, Grandma Mazur, it was like her kindred spirit almost.
Right. They were definitely spirit animals.
Her 75 year old white saggy ballsy
saggy,
kindred
skinny grandma that looks like chicken bones, and then the
in spandex
black hooker lady in spandex too.
Also
they,
in
like,
spandex.
Twin. Yeah, exactly. Like twins.
Also
almost.
In spandex. Okay, so we are talking about how much we love this book, and I have a feeling there might be a different opinion going on.
I can't imagine that.
Me either. So my silent.
So
partner.
Ladies, let's do what we don't do well and be quiet. Rush.
Let's try.
Do tell.
This book was an atrocious pile of garbage. Stephanie is just a horrible person. She has no personality, no self-discipline, no punctuality. Every comment she makes, she's thinking to herself, every comment is a depraved, narcissistic one. Does she think she's funny? Because nobody is funny. This entire book is utterly devoid of any humor whatsoever. Is she supposed to be some kind of role model, either for people in general or for women in particular? Because I think she's a terrible role model. She spends the entire novel thinking only of herself and instant self-gratification. You already mentioned the daiquiri mix. But in addition to that, she's constantly trying to talk her way out of things, like not getting her car repoed. She's drinking beer for breakfast because she didn't think, oh, let me buy some groceries.
She's also eating hamster nuggets.
I'm not saying that's a bad idea, but I don't have a hamster, so. Okay, sorry.
So, no, I got to say, I could not appreciate this novel at all, but I was kind of curious about it from a certain perspective, the perspective of it being a detective novel. I'm curious at how it compares to other detective novels. I'm a big fan of Edgar Allan Poe's The Purloined Letter and Isaac Asimov's Caves of Steel. If anybody's read any of those, I'd appreciate your input there. Or if you haven't read those, what other detective novels have you read, and how does this compare to them?
Alex Cross. I've read a lot of Alex Cross.
Wait. First of all, so you're saying you kind of liked it then, Russ?
Did you like the book?
I liked very much how I could compare it to other better novels.
So you like that it set a floor? Right. Here's your lifetime of reading. That's the floor from which any book can rise above.
Okay, let me go out and make sure this is abundantly clear. It wasn't, by us, any stretch of the imagination, it was not the worst book I've ever read.
All right. Right.
That's good.
Hey, now.
That is like, I feel like that's a victory. I'm excited about that. I think that's great.
I agree, totally.
It was much better than Gone Girl.
Oh, I hated Gone Girl. I hated Gone Girl so much.
So, I wouldn't feel comfortable comparing One for the Money to the other books you mentioned, because I don't think they're quite on the same literary plane. So it's not really fair to compare. And I would also like to say that I do not feel that Stephanie Plum is a role model for anyone. It's probably safe to say you should not do the things she does. Except maybe, you know, if there was free margarita mix. But
would you spend your last dollar on it?
I feel like I have my stuff together a little more than that. So it wouldn't be my last dollar. But if I needed a blender and there was margarita mix, I'd choose that model.
Right.
Yeah.
And so comparing to other detective novels, Lauren, Julie, opinion?
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I've like kind of just the buddy aspect of it. Like I'm thinking Jonathan Kellerman with the Alex Delaware and Milo Sturgis novels, and James Patterson with Alex Cross. And I forget who Alex Cross's friend was, because it's been forever since I've read an Alex Cross novel. Like, you know, you have those friendships and you're able to compare the friendships because Milo and Alex, again, they're friends. So it's kind of like Stephanie and Lula, where they're friends, but they're partners too, even though with them it's, and it's both kind of unofficial now that I think about it, because Alex was a psychologist. So he wasn't, like, he was working as a consultant, but a lot of times it wasn't for the police. It was just because Milo asked him to, because they were friends.
Well, I think in this first one, Stephanie and Lula weren't really partners yet.
Yeah.
So it was more her and Ranger throughout this one.
Yeah.
And I'm having trouble assigning one of them to the Sherlock and one to the Watson. but
right.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't really... I mean, I suppose it's pretty standard issue, like, detective novel, but I'm struggling to compare it to any that I've read in the past.
Well, I can actually compare this pretty well to The Caves of Steel, where you basically have your protagonist hunting down something that seems a little bit above his pay grade. If you take the humor out of One for the Money and throw in scientific philosophy, and then if you take out the fact that she's a novice, if she were to be as skilled as Ranger, other than that, I find them to be very, very similar. Now, it's been a long time since I've read The Purloined Letter, but as I remember it, that was kind of a similar structure as well. Okay, so that leads me into my next question. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Julie.
Nope. Go.
Okay. That leads me to my next question. You guys brought up Ranger. Now, it seems like she would have been absolutely flat on her face for the entire novel if it weren't for Ranger. So I'm going to ask either a two-part question here. Is what was the significance of his character? And secondly, what if, because if you remember, she was able to get the contract because Morty Byers was ill.
Appendix.
Exactly. So what if it had been Ranger who had been... appendicitis, and Morty Byers had been around. Ranger hadn't have been there to help. What? How would the novel have played out?
I think it would have been a lot funnier. I think that she would have gotten herself into a lot more situations, because Morty Byers didn't really seem like he was all that competent either.
Oh, see, I don't think the novel would have even happened, because Ranger would have just... I don't think Morty would have shared. I think Ranger...
Agreed.
...likes Stephanie as... He thinks she's funny. Like, look at this. Look at this business that's trying to get up here.
Right.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to hold this girl's hand. Right. Look at this hot mess.
And he actually,
I think he says that.
He compared himself to her to Eliza Doolittle, and kind of did a Mind Fair Lady thing.
Right.
Which I thought was hysterical.
I did think that was really funny. But yeah, like the rain on the plains. So I don't think Morty would have supported her at all. I think it would have just been Stephanie solo, and
that's why the books had been funnier, just because it would have been her just getting into mess after mess after mess, because Ranger was there to bail her out a lot of the times. Like when Morelli cuffed her naked to the
to the shower rod, right?
Ranger was the one who rescued her, so yeah. I feel like if it was Morty Byers, she would have had to, that would have been a sink or swim moment for her. So
well, I think
a lot funnier, or like Russ said, it might not have even happened.
Yeah, I think with her personality, it would have just sunk and she would have moved on to being a lingerie buyer somewhere else. I think that carrot that Ranger dangled in front of her was enough to keep her going. Like, oh, hey, if I have his help, I might actually be able to do this.
I think and the series also would have been way less sexy without Ranger.
Amen.
I think you also had that dynamic of her trying to just get in because Vinny didn't want her in, so it made her more determined to want to do it. And
that's
then she
true.
Was blackmailing him because
of that doc.
He has some the doc, and he has some weird fetishes that his wife doesn't know about. His wife's father is a mob hitman, so
Harry the Hammer.
Think it's the thing of it. It would have still been there, like, but she would have made it. Would have maybe been her more so trying to like extort cases from him, so it might have been funnier from that perspective, but then it might have also gotten played out a little bit too much, just because I feel like they bring that story up like once or twice in the novel and it's fine, but I feel like it would have been like constant if it was her bantering with Vinny.
I would have liked to have seen her interact with Morty a little more. I think that could have been kind of funny.
Uh-huh.
You know, he comes out of the hospital kind of looking like death. He's like, why are you trying to move in on my cases? So I think that could have been a funny angle, but then he blew up, so...
Yeah, so there's that.
So not so much in that interaction anymore.
And I just gotta throw it out there. I think I'm the only one who's, like, Team Morelli. Like, I like Ranger, but I kind of like the buddy aspect of her relationship with him. Like,
no!
I am Team Morelli, and later on Team Bob and Morelli. Bob the dog.
Bob the dog. I'm team either, team both. I like having both of them there.
I like having both of them there too. Like, she obviously like later on obviously settles with Morelli, but I can't remember, but it's really fun in the books where she's kind of like torn between the two of them cuz they're so different.
Yes.
But I have gotten a little annoyed that she does get more dependent on Ranger. I feel like in later books, he bails her out all the time, which I don't like. But she also helps him. He brings her on to help him with stuff quite a bit, too.
Yeah.
Which I like.
That's true.
Yeah. Sorry, I'll quit talking about... It's hard not to talk about how they... Yeah,
I know. The later
going back and reading this first one, I was like, huh, he doesn't call her babe.
And that
he
actually...
Did not know.
Like,
did
reading
he?
This babe. One...
I
kind of wanted to skip everything because 10 Big Ones was my favorite. So it made me kind of want to skip everything in between and just reread 10 Big Ones because, you know, you had Grandma Mazer, you had Sally Sweet, you had all of them.
Oh, yeah!
Oh, see, I don't remember 10 Big Ones.
I remember Sally Sweet. That's about it.
He was driving the school bus.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
Lauren, how do you remember that? That's amazing.
I'm impressed.
That was my favorite one. And just the ending of it with Sally Sweet and the school bus, like, it was just very, very memorable. Because at that point, you kind of think, like, oh, no, Stephanie's done. And then Sally Sweet and the school bus come in to save the day.
Amazing. Well, I think that's sort of... So part of my trouble with the series is that it gets a little formulaic.
Right.
And I'm not saying I didn't enjoy them, but Stephanie pretty much mucks things up repeatedly, and then someone swoops in to save the Eagles come and save the day in every book.
See, I don't, in this kind of novel, since it's more of a comedy, I don't mind the formulaic aspect of it.
No, I don't mind it too much.
Now, Jodi, like, and I know that we're not, you know, discussing Jodi Picoult, but that is formulaic writing.
Can I pause? I've
ever seen it? Yeah.
I'm getting a lot of background noise from one of your two lines.
Oh. Here, I'll mute. I'll see if it's me.
Crackle pop. All right, Lauren, okay. Pick up where you were.
Okay. The only thing that's going here is an air like purifier, so I will turn it off.
I think it's Julie.
Okay.
Is it me? I was just...
All right.
You're eating Pringles or something.
I did just open something.
I know. I know you. Don't play.
damn, this phone is good.
Now I'm hearing it. Now I'm hearing it. And I'm kind of sad that I had crackers after school because I sort of want chips right now.
I was just going to say, I'm staring at a bag of chips. You guys mind if I eat them?
I don't even think we have chips here. I think that, like,
Jody McCall.
I know. I want to hear from Jody.
Okay.
If you've read one of her books, you've read every single one of them, because I noticed, yes, after, I think it was called Change of Heart, that it's the exact same formula every single time.
I mean, there are slight variations. Give her a break.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's always, there's the court case, and the defense attorney is standing up for the underdog.
And the mom.
And then the defendant's like, yeah, I have to get on the stand and tell my story.
And the story is different than the entire rest of the book, because all of a sudden, in the middle of the case, the defendant's like, oh, wait. I just never mentioned this important fact throughout this entire.
Or like in the case of 19 Minutes, I did it, but she did it first, and
right,
and I just put this guy out of his misery, essentially. And then it just like I said, it just became very formulaic, and I was like,
I made the mistake,
not a funny book,
so of reading. Yes, it's too much drama. I made the mistake of reading like 3 Jodi Picoults in a row one summer, and I haven't read a single thing of hers since. Because maybe in like 5 or 10 years I can pick it up again. On the other hand, mm-hmm, when we go back to Janet Ivanovich, I tore through probably 10 or 12 of these right in a row. And I kept reading.
I think the
comedy helps.
Yeah,
I totally agree. I went through a period of, like, when I first found the series, I read a bunch of them in a row. And then I will say, I was like, you know what? My brain might be turning to mush. Maybe I should read something a little bit more challenging. But I certainly could have done more had I not, you know.
So, Lauren, do you remember?
Scrambled eggs.
Do you remember when you first read them? Like, what?
I got, I think it was One for the Money. I think I got it at, like, Half Price Books really cheap, and it actually got to the point where if I wasn't able to make it to Half Price Books, I was day-to-day subbing at the time. My school library has the Stephanie Plum books, so I had...
That doesn't seem appropriate at all.
I guess it's just... I mean, like, they're teenagers, so I guess okay, it's one of those things, like, at that point, like, there's so many teenagers that don't read that it's... I mean, like, me personally...
Read.
There's some real bad ideas in there.
Me personally,
some
I'm
bad
like,
stuff.
I'm like, you're reading? Awesome. Keep reading. I don't care what you're reading. Just read.
Right, there's that aspect.
Porn is great.
I actually did suggest Stephanie Plum to a bunch of my 7th period girls, and I was like, make sure you're allowed to read whatever you want, because I don't want your parents calling me and saying, why are they reading this filth?
I have a question for you here.
Okay.
Think about books the exact opposite way of narcotics, and tell me if I'm right or wrong. So with a narcotic, you can start with a gateway drug. Start with booze and marijuana, and you want to start trying something bigger and badder. With books, if you get used to the idea of sitting down and scrolling through 200 pages of words, would you maybe start with Ivanovich and move on to Picoult, and then eventually you're reading Hemingway and Shakespeare?
It's a possibility.
I think for me it was the exact opposite. Like, I mean, granted, yeah, I was kind of reading whatever I wanted, but like when I was in high school, I was having to read over the summer, so I was having to read the Nathaniel Hawthorne's, I was having to read the John Steinbeck and all of that. So granted, yeah, like I said, I've been pretty much a reader since I could remember. But it was always kind of a mix, and I was always having to read. And I feel like, again, that, you know, I had the easy stuff, and that was stuff that I could just read on my own that I liked. But I was also getting the more substantial works and classics as well.
Oh, see, I feel, Lauren, you and our friend Jack recommended One for the Money to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to thank you. But it was a good one. This sort of was a gateway book for me, because after I had our second child, my brain was marshmallows. And Like, I could pick up a magazine and read a couple of articles, and then I was done, which was completely uncharacteristic of my reading life thus far. If I started a book, I finished it, I didn't care how bad it was, how good it was, I'm just going to consume it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably in 2 or 3 days, less than a week.
That's
a fast reader.
I'm a fast reader too, but that's where we differ. Like, if I don't see myself being able to get through it in a couple of days, then I just quit on it.
That wasn't happening for me after number two. I was really bummed.
Phrasing.
I didn't know what to
Phrasing.
Do. I know, right? After my second child.
There you
and,
go.
I picked up one for the money, and it made me laugh right off the bat. It wasn't exactly intellectual, and I feel like it holds a special.
What?
I know. Well, I mean, it was pretty highbrow, but not, not extremely highbrow. It wasn't exactly Hawthorne.
See, I actually like that it wasn't heavy, that it wasn't Hawthorne.
Oh, me too.
I think a lot of times we kind of discount, and I know that, like, I'll do that as well. Like, a lot of times, like, if you look at my Facebook statuses, if, you know, I get, like, Holly Madison's autobiography, I'm like, oh, my shame spiral happened today when I was at the library. But,
I picked up something I'm
like
not proud
I
of.
Say to my students, I mean, as long as you're reading, even if it is something like a former Playboy Bunny's autobiography, you're still learning something. You're still creating a story in your head. You're still getting mental images. You're still using your imagination.
I mean, no matter how trashy the book is, it's better than TV, right?
Yeah.
Or at least I keep telling myself that when I want to read another Stephanie Plum novel.
Just
see,
added old Holly to my library list, ladies.
You need to add Holly. It's good.
Did she
add
just Holly. Go on the list?
She has
just
two
went on
out.
The list.
There we go.
Read the first one. I haven't read the second one yet. It's on reserve at the library, though.
She had enough material to write two books. That's amazing.
It's astonishing. I should probably write a book.
The first one is all about her life at the Playboy Mansion. The second one is, like, all of her stuff in Vegas because she did The Girls Next Door, and then she also had that show Holly's World for a couple seasons. So I think the second one chronicles Holly's World, whereas the first one more or less chronicles her life before and right after Girls Next Door.
See, I didn't even know who she was. So there you go.
Amazing.
Amazing. I took my head out from under this.
You learned something.
See, and I wasn't even reading.
Exactly. That makes me feel smart because I imparted this knowledge on you.
Okay, I'd like to, if we can, come back to the novel at hand. I do have a few more questions I wanted to ask about that.
All right.
The first of which is, how much did the city contribute to the flavor of the novel? What would it have been like if it had taken place in Baltimore or Miami?
Oh, I mean,
Baltimore, similar. Miami, maybe. Not similar.
No, I feel like...
Or any other city. I'm suggesting something as different as possible, but Pittsburgh, St. Louis, Toronto.
No, I feel like... and forgive me, but there is a certain level of accepted hot messness that comes from a Jersey girl.
Yes.
That
yes!
Helped this novel.
Just every stereotype that you've ever heard about people in New Jersey, I feel like is represented in this novel at some point.
Right. It's just embraced.
If it took place somewhere else, I don't think it would fit as well. If it took place in Pittsburgh, I don't think I would have enjoyed it.
Well, I mean, because Pittsburgh girls, we have a bit of a rep, a little, you know.
I feel like I'm the only
but
one
it's
that
not,
doesn't.
Not That's, quite as Jersey intends.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when she talks about, like, teasing her hair up bigger than her head, you're like, oh, yeah, well, of course you would. Why would you not?
Yeah.
So what I like about it is it's the low expectations of the middle class, the lower to lower middle classness, the low expectations of just kind of the general area I think that she lives. Like,
that's true.
which is amazing because living in the DC area, it's all about power and wealth and all of that. And okay, maybe not to us, but
and I also,
but
in saying that, Julie, I was actually thinking like that made me think of House of Cards and how, you know, how different it would have been if Stephanie Plum would have been in DC, because I would have been thinking kind of more of like a power structure, like, you know, Frank and Claire Underwood or something like that. Like the hot messiness would not be present there.
No, I think you're right, Julie. Like down here, it's all about what car you drive. Like, can you imagine rolling up in the Buick or what was? No.
The Nova no. and
the Nova.
We had a Nova. We had a Bonneville.
I was so excited because I drove a Bonneville very recently.
And that was like a sweet. That was like.
That was like a nice ride.
That was like a nice ride.
He was
like
the successful sales
excuse to marry this man.
Are you really sure it was a nice ride? Because I got the impression that Stephanie's mother was almost as dumb as her daughter. And a Bonneville, a 94 Bonneville is her idea of a nice car. Whereas if you just, you know, looked a little bit higher, you could find somebody in a BMW or a Lincoln.
We get into those societal socio-class roles, though, again, because, again, she wouldn't be...
He's driving a new Buick.
Yeah, she wouldn't be looking for this, you know, rich man. She would be looking for someone within her neighborhood.
Right. Like a guy who made it is a guy who drives a Bonneville.
And sells appliances with bonus margarita mix.
Right. Yeah. Like...
Yes.
Like a Jeep Cherokee is like a Mercedes.
Yes. And I think that, I think New Jersey, I can't imagine this novel being set somewhere else.
No, not at all.
Because I think like you were saying, Julie, like that mentality sort of flavors the whole thing.
Yeah. And it kind of makes me think, you know what? Maybe I need to lower my expectations.
I should get out of these DC suburbs. They are doing something to my brain.
I need to have lower expectations of
my husband is shaking his head like, no.
Like, maybe I need to just worry about buying a blender and maybe paying my rent. But if I can't, it's okay. I'll just sell my stuff.
I will just sell.
It's fine.
You saying that, when you said the thing about paying rent and buying the blender, that really reminded me of Jen Lancaster, which probably is another reason why I liked Stephanie Plum so much, because maybe she would, like, maybe to me she was Jen Lancaster on a much smaller scale.
Well, you know, no impulse control and better metabolism. So what I noticed this time, because I made a point of looking, this book is 22 years old. But how I feel like it held up pretty well.
Yeah.
It feels a little dated, but not ridiculously so, right?
No. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, the only way that you really know is from some of the references to technology. But other than that, you're right. I think it holds up really well.
Yeah.
Sleaze balls.
Yeah, I agree. There's a few anachronistic, like you say, pieces of technology, but that's about it. Like, she doesn't have a cell phone, and
she buys an answering machine.
And talks about Hawking or VCR.
Yep.
But yeah, outside of that, I felt like this could have happened today.
Mm-hmm.
She drops her Verizon contract and gets a track phone because.
Yeah.
You know.
And that would totally work, and it would actually fit just because if she's a bounty hunter and.
Right. You're going to want to throw the phone away anyway. So it's perfect.
And it seems like Ranger would have track phones like everywhere.
He would probably just buy them by the case.
Yes.
That's what I'm picturing.
And every time Stephanie lost one, he would have a new one for her.
He would like probably have a holster of 3 or 4. Yes. So he could just hand them out on a regular.
Just like his cars when Stephanie was destroying like all of his cars. He would just have a new one. He's like, it's okay. It's fine. Here's another one.
Okay, so my other question, I had a few questions too. Have either of you, I know Russell hasn't, have either of you watched the movie?
No, I do not like Katherine Heigl, and I could not bring myself to watch the movie.
I didn't watch it either, which is surprising because I don't dislike her. I don't necessarily like her. I don't dislike her, and I love the series, so I don't know why I didn't watch it.
I was kind of curious about that myself because not only do I feel like this book would lend itself extraordinarily well to a movie, but also I'm quite a fan of John Leguizamo.
I did watch the movie, and you made a fine choice. It was not particularly good.
Well, that, I mean, I think that's why I didn't make a point of doing it, is because I heard it sucked. And I think I love the series. So I was like, I really don't want to.
I don't want to taint my.
Yeah. I don't, like, I know who, I heard that Ranger didn't look like Ranger.
No, Ranger didn't look like Ranger. Really.
I think it's also, like you were saying, Julie, I think it's the thing of, like, we, when it's, when it's a much loved series like this, when people love it, and it's so, I don't want to say acclaimed because I feel like that's not the right word, but acclaimed essentially. But we kind of get pictures in our heads about who would be the perfect Stephanie. And honestly, I can't think of an actress who would be the perfect Stephanie. So
no.
I wouldn't want it to be a movie. And if, you know, like I said, I didn't watch the movie because Katherine Heigl is not my Stephanie. And I don't think anybody is my Stephanie.
No, I feel like Stephanie is her own thing, and I
She is not my Stephanie.
No.
Yeah, I have all these characters painted so perfectly in my head. I could, if I were an artist, which I'm very much so not, I could paint them to a T. I could paint Bob the dog. I know who Bob the dog looks like.
I think that vividly. Morelli looks like the special agent from Lilo and Stitch.
I thought Ranger would be
more. Oh no, I'm sorry, Ranger, not Morelli. Ranger, right?
Like, Morelli, does he... Morelli's supposed to be like the hot, like, Italian look.
Morelli is like Bruce Springsteen back in the day.
See, I don't.
Not today, what? Springsteen.
No, for yeah. Sure. See, I didn't.
Because he's
no
from Jersey. Like the Italian Stallion. No.
No.
Okay.
No way.
Okay, but how about the special agent from Lilo and Stitch? Is that Ranger?
I could see that.
Okay.
But see, it would be one of those things, and I feel like it would kind of diminish the fact that Ranger was supposed to be kind of like a sex symbol, because now I'm associating him with
an, you didn't think that guy was hot?
Disney movie. No, not at all, because he was
a cartoon?
Cobra Bubbles. He was just like, mean and scary.
What I did love about the movie, and another thing that I love, love, love about this series, is that my grandma loved the series. And it is regretful that more people did not know my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
But this was probably one of the only movies she had seen in the last, like, 20 years.
Oh, like, wow.
She went out of her house and made a point. She went with
that's
my
cool.
aunt, and I think cousins, or definitely my aunt, picked her up, and they went to see this movie. So that just delighted me. Like, she was very excited. This was the only movie I can think of that she was excited. Like, she knew it was coming out, she had heard about it, and she wanted to go see it.
That's cool.
And she was a movie person.
My grandma was really into mysteries, and she actually, like, I got into Stephanie Plum after she passed away, and it was always, like, after that, it was always on my mind. I wanted to know if she liked Stephanie Plum, because I was always borrowing her mysteries, but I don't remember ever seeing Stephanie Plum there, so.
So, like, my grandmother did love Stephanie Plum.
Yeah.
She had many of the books. She shared them throughout the family.
I remember you telling me that. Like,
and
did you borrow books from her at one point?
I didn't, no. But my sister read them from my grandma.
Okay.
But what I loved, love, is that my grandma was one of, like, 18 children. It was a Brady Bunch family back in the 20s. Like, they were farmers, and each spouse passed away, and they got married and had 6 more kids together. So she just had this big, crazy family. And in the end, it was her and a bunch of her sisters. So she loved these books, and she passed them on to one sister, and that sister liked the books, and they passed them on to a third sister. And the third sister,
actually, I really like that.
Who, right? It's great. The third sister, who was a little more proper, got angry at my grandmother and said, "I do not want you to give me any more smut to read. I don't appreciate it." And I just think that's
amazing.
And I think that's
so fantastic.
Stephanie Plum, just by kind of today's standards, like, in reading One for the Money, I kind of feel like it's a little tame compared to today's standards.
It's relatively, well, it was smutty to Aunt
Thelma,
so.
But it was kind of like, Bart Simpson said this, and because we just watched The Raven in my English 11 classes, and Bart made a quip about how because Lisa said, well, you know, it was the 1800s. People got scared a lot easier back then. And he was like, oh, like Friday the 13th. It's like nothing now. So when you mentioned Stephanie Plum being smutty, it was kind of like, yeah, it's very tame by today's standards, but I could see someone older or maybe back in that time being kind of scandalized by
it. Well, my grandmother was furious that she thought it was smut because grandma was very proper, so she would not read smut.
Yeah.
It was just that her sister was judgmental. But I feel like it sums up a lot about their relationship, and my grandmother is a person. So that's another reason that One for the Money holds a special place with me, because my grandma liked it, and she has since passed. So that's, I just think it's really funny that she said she would sit and read it and laugh out loud in her bed. And then she would like call people and tell them things that Stephanie Plum did in the book.
And that
like it was her girlfriend who just.
Yes, like that Stephanie. You'll never guess what she did today.
Stephanie Plum is very much like a chain book too. Like you said, your grandma passed it to her sister and then they passed it to another sister. We kind of did that with you. Like, I told Jack about it, and then we told you about it, and it kind of went from there.
Yes. It's a, like, oh, okay, you're looking for something to read. Have you read these yet? But I feel like, at this point, most people have read them. So
you
one other
thing.
Gotta
get those newer generations hooked on it, though.
I mean, you're working with the young people, right?
Yeah, I literally said to about, I think it was three girls last week, I'm like, One for the Money. I'm like, if you're allowed to read whatever you want, your parents aren't going to get upset with you, go for it. I'm like, it's hilarious.
How old are they again?
16, 17, they're juniors.
Oh, okay. They can handle some curse words.
Yeah,
and
right?
The one actually, like, that's why I started watching House of Cards, because she was continuously saying, because she knows I watch a lot of TV and she knows I watch Game of Thrones. She's like, were you watching House of Cards? House of Cards.
I've been telling you to watch that for years, so.
I know.
Chill your jets.
I know.
So I'm looking at the notes I made when I read the book. And one of the things I thought you would kind of like, Russ, is the way the humor kind of builds. Like, I wrote down a quote, and Stephanie said, of course someone was watching. I think this was when she was on Stark Street going to the gym for the first time. Or the second time. She says, of course someone was watching. I'd roared around the block twice after my muffler fell off this morning. This isn't exactly what you would call an undercover operation. That didn't make you laugh when you read it? He just shook his head no. And Bernie drives a Bonneville. I was very excited about that. Okay, and this is my note almost specifically for you, Russell. If Grandma Mazur shooting the chicken during dinner with Bernie didn't make you laugh out loud, then we probably can't be friends. That whole
that was
scene
the best thing ever.
Was hilarious.
I love that.
Or you've never had a Grandma Mazur in your life. So my grandma, who read the books, was also a GM, Grandma Med, and she literally did shoot a gun through her door one
Stop.
Day. No, that's true. True story.
Are you serious?
I can't make that up. Yeah. So, like, Grandma Mazur just really spoke to me.
I did not have a Grandma Mazur in my life, and I just, like, that made me wish that I did have one. Like, I loved my dad's mother dearly, but it was kind of like, you know, that the older lady who's just doesn't care, like, she's just, this is her, and this is what she's going to do, and she's old, just... and she,
that was my grandma. Like, she needed to have a gun in case someone came in. She lived alone in her mind. You know, maybe not exactly true, but...
EGAF.
Yeah. She's just going to do her thing. And I think that was Grandma Mazur. Like,
I love that. You
brought a gun to dinner? Let me look at that. I'm going to shoot this turkey.
Yep.
And just that entire circus.
Yeah. I put the bullets in the gun for you because why would you carry around an unloaded gun?
And that's just... Why would you... I mean, what good's that going to do you?
And like, there was logic there, and it was also her kind of protecting Stephanie because, well, what if someone tries to shoot at you and your gun's not loaded? Here, look, I protected you.
Right? Like, she kind of has a little grandma instinct, but it's pretty left of center. I also made a note that on page 74, and this made me laugh too, Stephanie says, women's rights aren't worth dick if they mean I can't get a man to do my bug squashing.
I'm actually, like, I'm opening. Yeah, I found it. I just found it.
Yeah, that's kind of true.
That's awesome.
Like, even if you don't specifically want someone to squash your bugs, like, there's some guy job. I don't really want to take the trash out. I don't want to schedule an oil change. If I was Stephanie Plum, I would just not change the oil and let the car blow up. But, you know.
Oh, wait, she did that.
Right. Probably.
I prefer.
Okay, so I'm gonna go ahead and say that we've exhausted this novel pretty well. Yes. So I'm going to send us around for our final lap. I'm going to give everybody the same three things we ask every time. That's going to be your final thought, your book rating, and then what else have you been reading? What else have you been excited about? We'll go ahead and start with Sarah.
I went out because I'm sitting next to him. So my final thought is, I think I mentioned it a couple of times, this book just holds kind of a special place. It's not literature, but it brought me out of a reading funk. It makes me think of my crazy grandma, and it definitely made me laugh out loud a few times while reading. So it's not highbrow, but it has a special spot for me. It's a 5 out of 5 just for nostalgia, even. It's might not be highbrow, but it is loved. And then what was, okay, so final thoughts, my rating. What have I been reading? I read The Luckiest Girl Alive recently, and I really enjoyed it. It's one of those novels that you should go into not having any spoilers. I'm very anti-spoiler, so I won't give away too much. But from the very outset of the novel, you're trying to figure out what is going on with this chick's life. And when I first started, I thought I was really not going to relate to the main character. But in the end, I thought it was pretty good. And what else? I'm reading Salem's Lot in preparation for our next podcast.
Love it.
I like it much, much more than any other Stephen King I've read lately. I recently read The Mare by Mary Gatskill. It was good. I liked it. There was a horse on the cover, so I had a throwback to like 14-year-old me. I was like, I should read this.
Oh, The Mayor.
Oh.
Not The Mayor.
Sorry. Is my Pittsburgh showing? Is my Western PA showing? M-A-R-E. Mayor. Horse. Mayor. No.
The old gray mare. She ain't what she used to be.
Right? Mayor is right.
Well, in Tennessee, search. That actually has rules for us. It's The Mayor.
A mayor?
Mm-hmm.
The mayor of town? I think that's perfect.
That was the horse version.
Oh, right, mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, 2 syllables for the horse version. Sorry, proceed.
I'm good. That's what I'm excited about reading Salem's Lot and liking it. That's what I'm excited about, because I'm not a Stephen King fan, so I'm excited this is working. And then we're going to pass it to Julie.
Okay, so final thoughts on the book, I would say, are, I think the reason that I love these books so much, and I just kind of figured it out, is because Stephanie Plum and Grandma Mazur both have aspects of women I want to be when I grow up. So specifically, I would say probably more Grandma Mazur. So Sarah and I have talked about this at length, but I can't wait to be that old person that doesn't care and does whatever, says whatever, and you have an excuse because you're old. It's so fantastic. And then for Stephanie, see, I actually need to be a bit more impulsive. So I kind of love that fly by the seat of your pants kind of attitude. Obviously, she takes it to, like, you know, inappropriate lengths, but I love that. So those are the two kind of, you know, I guess, reasons that I didn't know that I loved, or reasons why I didn't know I loved these characters so much, but after kind of talking through it, kind of makes me understand. So, and then also I was really nostalgic reading this book, because obviously I've read these books over the course of 15 years or something crazy like that. So it's really fun to kind of go back and see how it starts, and, you know, kind of realize why you love it so much. So I too, for the nostalgia vote, and because these characters are like friends of mine, because I
did we lose you?
Oh, sorry. My husband just tried to call.
Okay.
I too am going to go with these characters, friends of yours? I too am going to go with the 5 out of 5
There you go again.
Sorry about that. And then what am I reading? We all know what I'm reading. I'm reading Outlander. It's really hard for me to stop, which I'm is also- why I'm on book two.
I'm also
You guys
reading
have all been there. I won't bore you with it. I'm loving it. I'm getting ready to watch the first TV show.
I think we should get popcorn and do it.
Ooh, really? Will you watch it with me?
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay, let's do it. I'm really excited.
Okay.
I just looked at the characters online. It was a really big deal. Anyway, that's all I'm reading because that's all I can handle.
I know, because it's great. Lauren.
It's awesome. Yeah. Okay.
I tried to read Outlander and I got a couple pages in and said, screw this, and then took it back to the library. It's gone. Yeah. Ship has sailed. Yeah, I don't even know why. I don't even remember why I didn't like it, but I tried a print copy too, because a lot of times that sort of holds me back. That was the problem with Game of Thrones. I tried to read it electronically and that didn't work out for me. I did better with a print copy. Outlander was a print copy. I did not get very far into it, and I was just like, nope. And it was a summer read, so.
Okay, we could pass it to Lauren. What was your final thought rating, and what else you reading, and what else you excited about?
All right. My final thought, I just really like the character of Stephanie Plum. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm very clumsy, knows that I'm basically, essentially a hot mess. I liked that Stephanie Plum kind of makes it okay to be a hot mess. Like, it's okay not to be embarrassed that you tripped and fell. And granted, like we all said, she kind of takes everything to an extreme. But I just kind of, I loved her personality. It was just, it was the kind of me that I would want to be if I didn't have impulse control.
Right. And better metabolism.
I have a pretty good metabolism. Not gonna worry about that. You know, but either way, I could see and it's one of those things, a lot of people say that they choose presidential candidates because they could see themselves hanging out with them. I could see myself hanging out with the Stephanie Plum type and loving it.
Oh, I could not hang out with Stephanie Plum.
I could.
But I'll read about her.
We would just be hot messes together.
I'd kill her. That's a really interesting point. Would you want to hang out with her? My first instinct was yeah, and then I was like, no.
Oh, think about that. It'd be terrible.
I'd be all about it. I'd be like, yeah. My rating, I'm actually going to do a 4.9. because I liked
it. Not quite perfect.
I don't want to give it perfect just because there were ones in the series that I just liked way more. Like I said, 10 Big Ones was my absolute favorite out of the series. So I can't, in fairness, give one for the money full 5 when I know very well that there was another one in the series that I enjoyed so much more.
I'm playing loosey-goosey.
That's
with the
so awesome. Now,
I love that, though. Yeah.
Me, man. I'm going to read 10 because...
You need to read 10.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I loved Sally Sweet. I mean, of course, it's going to be after Outlander, but... Yeah.
Just saying.
Sally shows up.
There are
eight
800-page novels there.
So. Albert Clown, the lawyer,
it's gonna be a while.
Shows up. Valerie, Stephanie's sister's in it. It's
oh, that's
perfect. Right. It's just... It was my defining Stephanie Plum. It was my favorite. What I'm reading now, like I was telling you guys, Julie, before you called in, I'm still toiling with Dancing with Dragons, Dance with Dragons. It's more or less just with, it being the end of the year, close to finals, I'm having a hard time just trying to read something new. I'm rereading Salem's Lot, which is easy because I've read it to the point where my book is so beat up that it's falling apart. so, I mean, that's not hard. Just kind of intersplicing it with some true crime. There's some Anne Rule in there. I've read just some bits and pieces of The Stranger Beside Me. And one of my students recommended a book called All the Bright Places to me. It's a young adult novel. I just picked that up from the library. I'm going to be picking up Joe Hill's new novel soon. He's Stephen King's son, so we're going to see how that turns out. And I have Holly Madison's second book on reserve at the library, too. And I'm very excited about Game of Thrones.
Yay!
I'm watching it. I love it.
And you even had a Game of Thrones themed birthday.
I did. I had a Game of Thrones birthday cake. And it
which
was
I love.
Amazing. It was amazing. I actually wish I'd have gotten it one layer, though. I feel like the two layers made it harder to eat.
You just Stephanie Plummed it. Like, I'm going to get a double layer cake. Don't even care. I'm going to eat
it.
I feel like
Game of Thrones most of the ice layers. Yeah,
you can't have a single layer Game of Thrones cake. That's true. Julie's right.
Yeah. Like, but I ended up, because, like, it was getting to the point where it was, like, 2 weeks after my birthday. And John's like, I think you need to throw this away. And I'm like, the icing is still good. Right. It's like, the icing is still good, and I'm going to eat the icing off of here. I don't need to eat the cake part. So I systematically ate all the icing off of this cake and then threw it in the garbage. We did eat most of the cake, but... That's after it got Stephanie stale, like, I didn't want to waste. I didn't want to waste it.
You, Stephanie, plumbed the cake.
Yes.
We should make that a verb, probably.
Yeah, she would She would totally do that. I'm sure. She has done that, I'm sure.
Probably.
I kind of feel like the fact that my husband is present, that kind of keeps me from going full Stephanie.
Yeah.
That and, you know, the fact that I'm a teacher, like, I feel like if I had another job, that might encourage me to just go full on.
Like, if you were a bounty hunter.
Yeah.
Right.
It would be all over.
Not quite the type of role model gig that a teacher is.
Yeah.
So tell me how much you guys want to have some chicken from Cluck in the Bucket.
Yeah.
I wanted a pizza from Pino's.
I do want a pizza
from greasy Pino's pizza. Yeah. This is all true.
Okay. Sorry.
And the cheese.
Okay,
the
Russ.
Cheese noodles. Oh, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so we have a 5, and a 4.9.
Okay, so my final thought, and this is the best thing I can pull out of this entire episode here, is just how very, very thankful I am that everyone was unanimous in agreeing that Stephanie Plum is not a role model.
Yay, that's true.
Yeah,
she's not.
Yay, that's true, yeah.
Beyond that, you know, I tell you, I've read a lot worse than this. It wasn't really all that bad, but I could not say I enjoyed it at all. If you actually genuinely like this book for any reason other than the humor, which I found to be non-present, I would recommend strongly The Caves of Steel by Isaac Asimov. And so you guys know, I would love to hang out with Elijah Bailey and R. Daniil. I think they'd be a lot of fun and very interesting people to spend some time with. That being said, I give this book a 1.5 stars.
Oh, mean.
I call them as I see them.
Would you want to hang out with Stephanie Plum?
Yes.
Only if she was in her bathroom.
I mean, that was a good answer.
Other thoughts is... I am extraordinarily excited about City of Mirrors, Justin Cronin's third in the Passage series, coming out next week. I'm, in fact, going downtown to see him. He's going to be giving a talk at Politics and Prose next week, so I'm going to go see him and hopefully get a signed copy of the City of Mirrors. In addition to that, as we discussed, I'm extraordinarily angry about what Game of Thrones is doing to A Song of Ice and Fire. Every episode I watch, and it's about every 10 minutes, I'm looking at it going, no, that didn't happen. Okay, that happened, but it didn't happen exactly that way.
Daenerys is fire, Jon Snow is ice.
That is the Song of Ice and Fire, I believe so, yes. But I'm really much more interested in what's happening with Bran, and I haven't seen him in about 3 or 4 episodes.
He comes back in season 6.
Good. See, I'm operating under the assumption here that he was told he will never walk again, but he will fly. He's also shaping up to be the world's best warg, most powerful warg Westeros has ever seen. And now we have dragons. So putting 1 and 1 and 1 together, I believe that Bran is going to take control of some of those dragons when the battle finally makes its way over to Westeros.
I do not think he's going to be a dragon rider.
No, of course he's not going to be a dragon rider. I believe the three dragon riders are, and I'm just subscribing to this extraordinarily popular theory that the...
Spoiler alert, by the way.
It's a theory. There's no spoilers here. Okay. The three dragon riders are Jon, Dany, and Tyrion.
Yeah, that's what I was operating under as well.
Yeah, extraordinarily popular theory, but I believe that Bran is going to be taking control of one, if not all of them, at some point in time.
Okay.
So the final thing I want to discuss is... Obviously, our next book for the next episode is going to be Salem's Lot. Come along very well. Second time I've read it. Like it very much. I'm glad everyone's enjoying it. What should we do for episode 4? I would throw out there House of Leaves, although it's another horror movie, horror novel.
It's a horror novel. I'm down.
It's unlike anything you've ever read before. It's extraordinarily interesting. And
I hate horror.
Can you send me the info, Russ? I might, even if we don't do it, I might want to read it on my own.
Of course.
It's intense.
Thank you.
It's pretty heavy.
That's okay. I'm down.
Like different ink colors and notations and
I'm down.
Okay.
Somebody else had already thrown this one out, but Packing for Mars. That one sounds very interesting.
Oh, yeah. I love Mary Roach.
So that gets my vote.
Any other suggestions?
I'm going to go with Packing for Mars.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be the dissent, and I don't know.
Have you read any Mary Roach?
No.
So it's nonfiction, but she's... Ooh. No. Listen, I'm not really a nonfiction either. She's fantastic.
Because I can, like, if we're doing nonfiction, like, the only nonfiction that I'm able to really get into is, like, true crime nonfiction.
I can't endorse Mary Roach enough.
Slash Holly Madison.
Slash. I mean, that's true crime, just a different type of crime.
Yeah, say, like,
she's murdering your intelligence.
I say, give me, like, Anne Rule, and I'm all about that. I can probably suck that up in, like, a day.
Who is John Galt?
I don't know.
He's referencing Ayn Rand, of course.
Ayn Rand. I misheard you.
I think you did that in our one message too, because you said
it was a gag.
And I'm like, no, this is the lady that knew Ted Bundy.
Oh, she, we talked about The Martian too.
I would definitely do The Martian as well.
I would read that.
I would also recommend Fabric of the Cosmos, but I think that's probably going to be a little too heavy for this audience.
Easy now.
Ouch.
Right?
But true.
I mean, you know.
I calls them as I sees them. All right. With no further comments, I'm going to go call it an evening. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and have a good night.
You too.